Welcome to Paw Print Academy, your blueprint to raising better dogs. My name's Ryan, and I'll be your host for this journey. I've got my trusty co-host here, Brianna.
Hello.
And together, we're bringing you real-world training insights built on leadership, structure, and proven methods. We record this podcast with live clients on the line in one take with live, unscripted questions and answers. At the end of the day, this podcast is a lot more than just teaching your dog to sit or stay. It's about building trust, creating calmness, and becoming the kind of leader your dog truly needs. We do that with our three-pillar method of trust, obey, and perform. Together, we'll show you how these three pillars shape every step of training. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Episode 6, Accountability and Tools, Collars, Leashes, and When to Use Them. Welcome to Paw Print Academy. Tonight, we're going to be talking about accountability and the ways that we can keep it.
Yeah.
So when we are training a dog, if at any point you lose accountability, many dogs, they're very, very smart. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't think you're going to actually follow through with this. And so that is what we're talking about tonight. That is the concept of losing or keeping accountability. Mm-hmm. When a dog senses that you don't have accountability, immediately the conversation changes.
Yep.
And now it's, do I really want to do that?
Right.
Or
I'm having more fun over here.
Right, right. This squirrel is pretty awesome over here. So, the main concept tonight is that tools don't train dogs. Leaders do. But the right tool provides clear communication and keeps fair accountability in the mix. So, when fit correctly, what did I write down here? I don't give myself enough credit here. And so sometimes I look at my notes and my outline and I try to read it off and I'm like, oh, I messed that up. But I actually, excuse me.
Did not.
This is what happens when you try to record these in one take. So fit it correctly, condition it thoughtfully, and pair it with consistent marker words. And then you have a tool that will do the job.
Yep.
And do the job in a fair and ethical manner.
Yeah.
So let's address the elephant in the room before we start here. Because when anybody starts talking about tools, there is an entire, group of individuals that will immediately get very excited one way or another. So there is a very big movement of force-free trainers. There's a very big movement of positive only trainers. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I would consider myself and all of my trainers to be reward-based, balanced trainers. But the point is to be reward-based. And I think that that aligns with everyone. When you're using rewards to get the most result or to get the compliance of an animal, I don't think that there's too many people that would argue that a rewards-based program works the best.
Right.
But there is a definitive group of dogs that at some point are going to not respond only to treats.
Yeah.
Or food.
For sure.
Or toys. or whatever. Mm-hmm. And at that point, your hands can be tied, and offering them more food doesn't always get through on the communication, like paradigm or the little triangle. So what we're not going to discuss today is the, the ethical weight of using tools. If tools are not on your, in your repertoire, or you don't believe that they can be used the right way, or a good way, or an ethical way, or all of that, we're not going to go down that road with here tonight. So I just want to address that up front. What we are going to do is we're going to talk about how to use tools to use the absolute least amount of aversiveness in that relationship between you and your dog to build your relationship with your dog, to build communication with your dog, and to increase your relationship and also the dog's desire to listen to you. Mm-hmm. That doesn't come from forcing the dog to do something. It comes from encouraging the dog. I can sit here and I can encourage you to leave the room without any bit of force.
Right.
There is not, these do not have to be exclusive concepts. Yeah. So now that we've got that out of the way, when we select a tool, we want to do it based on the dog and the job. And then we want to fit it properly, we want to use it properly, and we want to understand the fit and the function of each individual tool. Now, usually when we talk about tools for dogs, I like to explain that there is a line of communication from you, owner, to the dog, and that is the leash. Now, there's only so many kinds of leashes that can... Well, so the actual leash part, the line that goes from you to your dog, you could dress it up a lot of different ways, but at the end of the day, it's just a line from you to your dog. Yeah. But what is perceived on the dog side is how the, based on the tool and the fit of it, they're going to get a lot of different information. Now, we talk about this hierarchy of the amount of information they're going to get and the amount of perception that they're going to be able to glean from any bit of pressure that you put on that leash or that they put on that leash is going to be it's kind of structured. And so at the very, very bottom, the least amount of perception the dog's going to get out of any of these tools is going to be a harness. And the harness... It is that way because the amount of pressure that you put on the harness is spread out over all of the surfaces of the harness. That's the most surface area on the dog's body, and it's spread out over the dog. And so you have to put a significantly more or a significantly increased amount of pressure on that leash to let the dog feel that pressure.
Right.
Whereas a collar is around the neck, there's a lot more nerve endings around the neck than just like around the chest of the dog. And so you should be able to get more information to the dog with less pressure with a collar than a harness.
Yeah.
And so the next step up from harness is at the bottom. The next step up is usually a flat collar. Mm-hmm. When... you want to talk about flat collars versus martingales?
Yeah. So a flat collar is the typical collar that you see everybody have on their dog. I'm always a big supporter of like leave a flat collar on your dog at all times. That's like where their ID tags can go. It's their in case of emergency collar, put your Apple tag on it, tracker, whatever you want to do with the flat collar. A martingale is a flat collar combined with a slip collar. So it basically has a loop in the backside of it that cinches when the dog pulls, so it gets tighter. And when they stop pulling, it loosens back up automatically on its own and relieves the pressure from the dog. So essentially, they're the same thing. Just one has a loop in the back that can tighten and loosen, whereas the flat collar is just one size, whatever you tighten it down to.
Yep. And so I tend to shy away from collars that have to...
They're nice angled.
I stand by. I'm going to mute some of these. So I tend to stay away from collars that slip over the dog's face. Maybe your pet dog will allow you to do that. Some dogs don't like it. Some dogs don't care. But as a trainer, I typically always go for collars that will just unbuckle and go around the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Martingale collars usually have to slip over the dog's face.
Head.
Yeah, head. Yeah. Right. You're staring at me like.
I was like, I don't know what word he's going for there. I think it's just the body part.
But every collar is different, right? So then we got a slip lead. So the next step up from flat collar, then martingale collar, because it uses the flat collar concept, but then has a martingale loop on it, and that just cinches it down, just like Bree said. So the next step up in levels of communication is going to be a slip lead. So for slip leads, this is a leash that just has like a free-floating ring on the leash, and you can... you'll move the line around the dog's neck and then clip it to the free-floating ring. And then that way it is able to get tighter or looser based on the pressure that you give the animal.
Right. And they're typically a thinner circular style. It's not flat, like a flat collar or a martingale. They're typically like thinner on the thinner side. You can find some that are thicker. They kind of make all different like sizes of them, but you'll see we typically use the thinner ones because, again, it comes down to communication. The thickness of the leash can also communicate or affect the communication that you're giving the dog. If there's a bunch of like bungee action going on that slip lead, which I know we've previously tried like Amazon brand slip leads and things like that, and they have a ton of like stretch in them, and if it's stretching, the dog's getting like static in the communication, essentially.
Right. So after a slip lead, then we can go up a little further, and I would put probably like a star mark collar just above that.
Yeah.
So a star mark collar is a plastic collar. Some people will call it like a plastic prong collar. But it has rounded raised ridges on the inside. And it has a martingale loop on the back. And so it kind of combines a couple of different concepts of the different collars so that it circumferentially tightens with the martingale loop. And that way, your inputs on the leash actually, they don't put as much pressure on the front of the dog's neck, right? And so it takes pressure off of the dog's airway. The other thing that it does is because of those raised rounded ridges, it contacts about 6 to 9 different places like around the neck, depending on how many links are in it. And that, one, it protects the airway, and two, it mimics the same type of feeling or proprioception that the dog would feel when a mother dog corrects a puppy. Right. When a mother dog corrects a little puppy, they're going to like put their mouth around the snout of the dog or around the side of the neck and hold the dog. Right. And a lot of times they just go and then they hold them until the dog calms down, until the puppy calms down, and then they release. Yep. Well, we can mimic that feeling with one of those collars. And so a lot of times what you see is a big puller. And then the last point before I move on is that it It is a tool that automatically takes away the exciting, self-gratifying feeling of pulling against something. Mm-hmm. Because it tightens around the neck, they're not just pulling against a single point of pressure. And that's really, really important because dogs generally enjoy pulling games. Mm-hmm. That's why tug toys are one of the number one sellers across the nation and have always been, right? Dogs love to play tug of some sort. Mm-hmm. And so there's thousands of different toys that are all about tug. Okay. So why is it confusing when we go out to walk and the dog wants to pull to get to something and they feel that pressure and then they pull through the pressure and then they get to where they're trying to go?
Right.
That's not confusing at all. That it makes total sense why that's going to be very fun and gratifying.
Yeah.
So the dog's going to keep doing it.
Yep.
So the Star Mark collar or plastic prong is going to help limit that. And then finally, I think at the top end for really, really strong pullers, we use or could use or could recommend a metal prong collar. Yeah. Now, a metal prong collar is one of those collars that looks awful. You look at it, and if you don't understand it, that thing looks like a torture device. You're like, oh my gosh. But if you understand it and you look at it and you break it down, it is not. And all of the prongs are very highly polished so that we only use one brand of prong collar, and that's a Hermspringer. And we just have found that the Hermspringer brand, it's made in Germany, and it comes pretty well polished. All of the little tips are very, very highly polished. So they're nice and smooth. So I can rub it on my neck, and I don't get any abrasions or anything like that. Also, I found that some pet stores sell like a cheaper version of it where the prongs are not as highly polished. And I want to remain as highly ethical as I can while accomplishing the goal of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I will spend the extra money on the Hermspringer in order to get a solid product there. Yeah. But these collars, you can look it up on YouTube, Amazon, something like that. We don't have any relation or sponsorship with any of this stuff. But the metal prong is a device that connects each one of the links, can connect or disconnect, so you can make it bigger or smaller. And all of those prongs interact with the neck the same way that the Star Mark does, the same way that I explained it. It also has a metal chain martingale loop in the back and usually on a rotating D-ring so that you can connect the leash and regardless of which direction the dog spins or turns, the leash doesn't get spun around and tangled.
Yeah.
So now that we've kind of talked about all of those collars, let's talk about the length of the leash. Mm-hmm. So usually most owners like a 4 to 6 foot leash. We use a 4 to 6 foot leash for most of our training and most of the things that we do. And I've had a specific length of 11 feet made specially for us. So I always played with 10 foot leashes and felt like they were just a little short, and 15 foot leashes seemed just a little bit big. And I was going to get some 12s, but I found these 11s and they work great for us. Yeah. So, we like the long lines when we start working on a hard pulling dog. Mm-hmm. And I like the long line because I want the dog to be kind of by themselves when they feel the tightness of the leash. I don't want the dog to just relate the tightness to me. I don't want the dog to look up at me and be like, hey, why are you pulling on my leash? Because honestly, I'm not. I am letting them go And when they get away from me, they're pulling on the leash. So I really want them to see and feel and understand that.
Yeah.
And if I'm standing right next to them and they constantly think that I'm just hassling them, well, then that puts strain on our relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I like a long line to be able to very clearly explain to the dog that, hey, far away from me is no fun because that's where you feel pressure. And close to me is good because you're always on a loose leash.
Yep.
All right. Anything to add on all of that?
I don't think so. Those were all really good topics. I think like people really go for like short leashes when they're teaching their dogs to walk close to them or working on recall and things like that. And I really do want everybody to hear and understand, like, just try the long line. And I promise you, you're going to see your dog like excel way faster than you trying to hold them right next to you on your side.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Even with reactive dogs, I find it so much more clear to them when they're able to take off and go just a few feet away from you and then they get tightness on the leash. It is a very different experience for them than me choking up on the leash because I see a dog coming. I know they're going to blow up. So I'm preemptively choking up on the leash.
Yep.
That's oftentimes not the right call. Okay, the last management tool that I want to bring up right now is a crate. I believe very, very strongly, and in my experience, I believe that a crate is an excellent tool when you are trying to train your dog. Because dogs need structure. And we have talked about this over and over and over and over.
Yep.
But dogs have to have structure. And the crate helps to build that foundational structure.
Yeah.
It gives you an opportunity to put the dog away where they cannot. Let's talk about it this way. Confinement is a training tool. And it's almost force-free completely.
Yeah.
If your dog enjoys or goes in and out of a crate because you have trained them to do that, you now have a huge leg up on someone who doesn't use a crate. And this is why. When you're about to do training, you put the dog into confinement. You put them into their crate. You give them about 10 or 15 minutes to be in there. And then you let the dog out, but not out. Let's say you have a big backyard or something like that. You don't just let them out and then out into the yard. You let them out and you go right into training.
Yeah.
So what you've done is you've gone from complete confinement to teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
You two are working together and you're training and you're doing it. It's reward based. You're feeding the dog. You're rewarding the dog. You're praising the dog. It's a fun experience. So the dog goes, as soon as you let me out, then we worked together. That was fun.
Yeah.
And then once that's all done, then you let them outside. Then you let them break or free or whatever it is, then you give them complete freedom. What so many people do is they take their dog and they let them outside first and they have complete freedom. And then they're like, cool, I'm going to work with you while you're outside. Hey, come sit down. All of these things.
Yeah.
Now you're limiting the dog's freedom in a time when they could be free, but instead they are having to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
That is a downgrade on the freedom scale. But if you don't have a crate at all, they're going from freedom inside the house to suddenly having to listen to you.
Yep.
So a crate is an absolutely awesome tool for you to build a step-by-step, like, the ability to, please jump in. I am at a loss for words today. What am I trying to say? The building blocks.
Yeah, it gives you the ability to build on the freedoms that the dogs get. So it goes from most restrictive to less restrictive to ultimate freedom, but you need to go in that order. So a dog doesn't get to go just from a crate to off leash outside to then leashing them to do a training session, right? Because the dog is not going to have a fun time doing that. It's not going to go, well, you brought me inside from my ultimate play space outside, and now you've put me on a leash and you want me to like do all these things with you.
Yeah.
So I just want people to look at the order in which they do things and understand that the dog's brain is wired that way. If you go from freedom to confinement, the dog is not going to be happy about that.
Yeah. All right. So what fit mistake do we most often see with dogs that either come to like our group classes or first time like lessons? What do you
100% collar fitting and how tight it is.
Yeah.
Some people have their collars to where the dog can slip out of it. And that is the most nerve-wracking thing for me that I see, and immediately just puts me on edge because it takes, I've seen it happen with a dog on like day one where it's like, no, I don't know who you are. Get away from me. It always happens with fearful dogs, right? They get left with somebody and they're like, nope. And they backpedal.
Yeah.
And it takes one good backpedal and one loop too small for the dog to be out of a collar and loose.
How do you measure a collar, or like, how do you
make I give sure it like that... 2 to 3 fingers.
There you go.
And that's plenty of room for them to breathe and function at a normal level. It's not going to bother them. It's not going to affect them in any way.
Almost all the time when we take in a dog or we see dogs at like our group class.
Yeah.
And they will almost inevitably have a loose collar.
Yeah.
And it's not a judgment. Like, you want your dog to be comfortable.
Yeah.
I totally understand that. You don't, and no owner wants to choke their dog.
Right.
So the thought process is either I will loosen their collar so that they don't choke.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, they're just going to pull just as hard.
Still,
it doesn't matter,
themselves.
Right? They're still going to choke themselves on that.
Yep.
And so then we try to correct that by putting them in a harness because I don't want my dog to choke. But when we put them in a harness because I don't want the dog to choke, nothing changes with the education on the dog side.
Right.
And we enable them to pull more comfortably.
Yep.
And so then the pulling just either stays the same or even worse. It gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When we're training dogs, what would be your process for deciding between a prong collar, a slip lead, or a different tool?
So it really depends, right? So it depends on what I'm doing. It depends on the dog. So when a dog first comes to us, typically we see a dog just like only has worn a harness or a flat collar. That's typically a martingale is probably the top of what we see communication wise from an everyday average dog owner, right? They usually go from harness to flat collar to martingale, and that's where typically it caps. If they've had any experience with collars and things like that, then they may have converted to a Hermspringer or a prong collar of some sort. Hopefully, at least a Hermspringer. So when I start off with a dog, I fall into a slip lead almost immediately because I don't start with a whole lot of structure for the dog. I just want the dog to follow along with me on the end of that 11-foot long line.
Right.
So I'm not pressuring the dog.
You don't start with a heel, right? You don't start with a, hey, walk on my hip.
Right, not at all.
No, you just want the dog to walk on the line somewhere.
Right, somewhere. And if the dog is incessantly pulling, then I just do turnarounds and turnarounds and turnarounds, and we'll just end up walking in somewhat of a circle.
Yeah.
So typically I will always, no matter the dog, kind of start with a slip lead because there's no danger there. It's just guidance at that point. I'm not offering any sort of correction. For super aggressive pullers or dogs that are already familiar with prong collars, sometimes I will go there rather quickly, depending. Like, I know we've had one dog before that the owner's already walked him on a prong and he was already way better on a prong, and you know, he got to us and he was on a flat collar and he almost like ripped my shoulder out in the first like 20 minutes. And I was like, where's a prong collar? Somebody bring me a prong collar. I can't walk this guy. So if it's uncontrollable to that point and they're already used to it, I will go to a prong collar if needed, but mostly just for walks and things like that. When I'm doing small exercises with a dog, or if we're inside or in a relaxed environment, I typically always fall into a slip lead. But for severe pullers or like walks where we're like really being intentional or learning corrections versus like guidance, then I will kind of swap over. I also will replace that prong collar with a star mark, depending on how, I call it like how soft the dog is, but it's really like how timid they are, how averse to corrections that they really are, because we get small dogs, we get timid dogs, and if those dogs are aversive already to, you know, big corrections or anything like that, then I will always start as low as possible. But yeah, I always will fall right into a slip lead, because one, it's the easiest thing for any owner to like control, because it's a leash and a collar all in one, and you literally just loop it over the dog's head and you just go. Super and easy. That's my favorite. And then we use the kind that obviously are like leashes and the slip leads. So it's like we always just have a leash on us no matter what.
Yeah. So the next like major point, what I think is really important to explain here, because when you get into the concept of corrections, everybody gets real nitpicky on like, how does this go down? Well, the concept is that you have no business correcting your dog, and a trainer has no business correcting the dog if they don't know what they're supposed to be doing.
Right.
And so that is what I think gets lost in translation, is a correction is not the same as a punishment.
Yeah.
And we have a rule in top dog training has a rule that we do not punish dogs. We don't use a punishment that happens after the fact. But if I have taught the dog what to do, I've taught the dog how to manage that pressure and how to manage that collar and how to manage that leash, and then the dog bolts forward and gets to the end of the leash and the leash gets tight, that's a correction.
Yeah.
And the dog corrects themselves all by themselves there. That's pretty fair.
Yeah.
Right? Because I've already taught them how to not do that. I've taught them how to, if you just walk next to me, you're on a loose leash. I give you no tension at all when you walk next to me. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important for people listening to always try to manage a loose leash. You want the leash to be loose 99% of the time, so that the only time it tightens is because the dog's not doing what they're supposed to do. They're not walking next to you. Right. They're bolting forward or back or side to side or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That's when the leash gets tight. So by teaching the language of leash pressure and using markers, the dog understands how to win before we actually add like accountability to the picture.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really important.
Right. And I think that's why like I always start with a slip lead, right? Because I use leash pressure.
Right.
And then if we need to go into even corrections with a prong collar or a star mark, we will. But if they, I mean, you can also eventually,
but if they don't need that and they don't need that pressure.
Right.
Right. Why use it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense to go out of your way to use, you know, a shotgun to kill an ant.
Right. But I will say like a lot of the times for most dogs walking, a star mark or a Hermspringer are going to be the safest options just for like their neck in general, because I don't know if anybody is aware, but if you let a dog incessantly pull on a slip lead, on a flat collar, on a martingale, any of that, they can collapse their trachea.
Oh yeah.
Without even like giving it much force that you can think of, but it depends on the size of the dog and how hard they're pulling, but they can 100% injure themselves in anything but a prong collar most of the time.
Which is why when you see a dog just pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling, and they are on a collar or something like that, it's like, ugh.
Right. It's like try pinching your neck or pushing on your throat and like breathing. There's no world where that's comfortable or you can do it for so long.
And that's why it's so important that we teach them to not do that.
Yeah.
And that is why, right, I have no desire for any dogs to get hurt. It's way better to just teach them not to pull. And if that has to be a little uncomfortable, just a little bit up front, for them to figure that out and to feel the difference and to be relieved by walking next to you, man, that just makes sense to me.
Right. I've really, honestly, I don't think I could tell you one instance where I've seen a dog on a prong collar and seen it like crying, screaming, like yelping, injuring itself, breathing crazy. 10 times out of 10, when you see a dog on a flat collar, they're like,
yeah,
because they can't breathe and they're just pulling all around.
Yeah.
It's always about the responsibility of the person on the other end of the leash, whether a dog is safe or not. It's not the collar.
But I think a lot of people see what they see.
Right.
And decide what that means.
Well, they make pretty colors in Hermspringers now, so it might help. They like powder coat them now into different pretty colors, and there's like a rose gold one, which I love. So pretty. But they look like a crazy device because they're metal, right? And it's shiny and it's obvious on most dogs, and so people are automatically deterred by them. But it's 100%, like, if you ask any dog trainer in today's world that uses like balance training, I'm 100% sure we'll say a Hermspringer or a Star Mark or something like that is going to be way safer.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so you kind of alluded to it. Like, what drill would you recommend that like a new handler use to teach pressure and release? So you were talking about the 180s, but I think there's a major drill that I like to use before that.
Right. I don't know which one you use, but I'm real big on the let's go or like the silent leash pressure where you drop back away from the dog. So I will go in the cul-de-sac and I will walk around the cul-de-sac circle with the dog, and I just give a let's go with like some light leash pressure behind it, just teaching the dog. So in dog behavior world, right, it teaches them to kick into like pack drive, because you never want a dog in defense drive or prey drive when you're out on a walk, because it's going to be tuned into squirrels. It's going to be tuned into, I need to tell that dog to back away from me, different things like that. But when a dog is in pack drive, they're with you. They're relying on you. You're relying on each other, and they're looking to you for pretty much everything.
Yep.
So my favorite is we will go out in the cul-de-sac, do some let's go in just a random like circle. If the dog starts pulling super heavily in front of me, I just will turn around and be like, nope, let's go. And I'm not giving corrections. I'm giving like little light leash pressure for them to understand that they need to be moving in the same direction as me, not within a certain distance.
Nice. One of my go-to drills right off the bat, and I try to teach owners this in like their first like private lesson when I do private lessons for them, is I'll stand there, let the dog check out, so the dog's on a leash, let the dog check out and relax. And then as they're sniffing around or whatever, you're going to just give a slight pull, and then you're going to slowly increase the pressure a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. And I'm increasing pressure until the dog yields to that pressure. At the moment the dog takes a step towards me or turns towards me or shows that they're yielding to that pressure, I'm throwing a party, right? So I'm throwing a party. I'm, yeah, great job. Or I'm going to give them a marker word. For the words that we use, that would be free. So I would pull, give a little bit of pressure. And when the dog yields to that pressure, then I say free. And then I continue away from the dog as the dog is kind of yielding to that and moving towards me. And then I offer them that reward. So we're working really hard on getting some of these like baseline skills and videos up on our YouTube channel. Bear with us. We're working on it. The other thing I was going to talk about is the other side of this. So like, how does one figure out the timing of using no? Because we can use our positive marker words, but I tell you what, one of the most important words on that walk is no.
Yeah.
So when you use no, we need to pair it with that pressure, that leash pressure. And if the no is followed by some leash pressure, the dog will learn that no predicts pressure.
Yeah.
Just like yes or free predicts a reward. That's an important relationship because the dog will always try, and as they learn and get more comfortable, they're always going to try to beat whatever comes next. Mm-hmm. And so eventually you're going to say no, and the dog's already, they're going to jump at the chance to beat you to whatever it was that you're going to do. And if that's leash pressure, if I have taught the dog that when I say no, as the dog like tears off or tries to like forge ahead, if I say no, and then I follow that with pressure, the dog's eventually going to beat that pressure and I'm going to say no, and they're going to take a step back.
Yeah.
And that's the gold standard. Mm-hmm. That's what we want to get to so that we don't have to put pressure. So we don't have to use that leash pressure. That's important. What signs tell you that the dog understands the communication and is ready for more accountability? Like, what would you look for in your dog to know that they're like understanding what you're trying to do?
I'd say like yielding to the leash pressure, right? It's like when you,
for sure, that's the gold.
You give
standard.
Light leash pressure and they are like, oh, what? And immediately look to you for direction.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's for sure what I was going to say.
Yeah.
When you pull using only your wrist, we don't ever yank. We don't ever pull with our elbow or our shoulder and all of that. We're just using our wrist. And when I give them that pressure and they look back to look at me, that tells me that they know exactly what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So I think that it's really important that progressive accountability stays fair, right? And so we want to add accountability. This is kind of our last concept for tonight. We want to add accountability in layers. We want to keep it proportionate, and we always want to follow it with praise for the compliance, right? When the dog does what we want, we always have to reward that. That reward could be food, it could be praise, it could be a toy, it could be freedom, right? Just like, well, there's a lot of examples, so I'm going to try not to go down a rabbit hole, but rewarding the dog is paramount.
Right. I think that's one thing for people forget to do. It's like they're so used to being like, no, don't do that. No, don't do that. No,
right.
Don't do that. When the dog does something that they like, they're like, oh, they're doing it. And they're like trying not to like spook them. They're
and
like,
that's what is so important that I want to bring up, because the other side of the coin here, and the reason why I think people get so passionate against tools and so passionate against this concept of like any type of pressure or force on the dog, is that I think a lot of people forget about the reward-based part.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, cool, now that I got them walking next to me, I'm just going to use this leash to control them. But you're missing out.
Yeah.
You're missing out on what is scientifically the quickest, most effective way to train your dog. Now, there are dogs, my Dutch Shepherd is a great example. Positive only training will only go so far with him.
Right.
And then he will take your lunch money
yeah.
and tell you to sit in the corner.
Yeah.
Because he is going to show you why he's in charge.
Yep.
But he was bred to be that person. He was bred to be that dog.
Yeah.
So he needs structure and he needs that, like, no, sorry, man. I know you're a big dog, but you're not that big.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we have to do these crazy concepts that you see on in TikTok and all this stuff, alpha rolling and all this stuff. We don't subscribe to any of that.
I don't
think it's necessary. It's like,
I've never even heard of it.
Right. Well, then let's not even get into it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I don't care what it is.
So,
I've just never heard of
the concept is that rewards, they work. They absolutely work. And so everything that we do, if you're going to use a leash to guide a dog, you have to also use what works the best on the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
And that's the reward. You can't forget it.
Yep.
So always start with the least intrusive effective tool and then escalate it only when needed, while always maintaining clarity. We always pair yes and free, our markers, to those rewards. We always pair no to some sort of negative.
Yeah.
Right? And by doing that, we maintain accountability on both fronts. Mm-hmm. If you're going to use an e-collar, where the e-collar isn't really the subject matter of today, but e-collars are getting more and more and more popular. And we use e-collars very, very successfully on my Malinois and my Dutch Shepherd go out and we go on trails and we go on runs and we go on all these things. And they can go on those adventures because I can maintain accountability even off leash with an e-collar. Mm-hmm. So introduce the e-collar only after the dog knows the command on a leash with our three languages. So our three languages are food luring, leash pressure, and verbal communication. If the dog knows those and knows what's expected, then you can pair it with the e-collar to get even better results. But if you're just using the e-collar right off the bat without teaching them what it means and how it works, and you're only using it to correct or punish your dog, you're doing it wrong.
Right. And I think that's one big thing we don't talk about either is like when it gets to an e-collar, a lot of times we go to an e-collar when dogs know that a leash is on or off, right? And people don't get to that phase of training very often where they're like, well, my dog does great when they're on a leash, but as soon as I unclip it, they're like, I don't have to listen anymore. And there's tons of dogs that can understand that difference. And I mean, there's tons of ways to execute the training of that. But people, I think, get caught up in the fact that dogs understand whether the leash is on or off.
Oh, yeah.
They know.
And so that's even part of our training
is
when we do in-home integration training, we take a dog and we train it for a few weeks. We do that. We do on off drills, right? Of just take the leash off and then put it on and then take it off and put it on. And one cool technique is to put two leashes on. Mm-hmm. So then you take the leash off and then you have them do a command. And a lot of times the dog's like sees the leash come off and is like, woo, I'm free.
Right.
I don't have to listen anymore. But you still have that second line on the dog. You still have accountability. When you get a dog like that, that is sensitive to that, that's where an e-collar really, really excels.
Yeah.
But what you usually I hear is the conversation is, oh, my dog doesn't listen at all. I think I need an e-collar.
Right.
Okay. Well, I think you might be missing the boat because we might be able to just teach them to listen regardless, right?
Right.
I don't support anybody who just uses the e-collar for corrections.
Yeah.
Because that's not how you train them.
Yep.
Let's see here. What else do I have written down? Corrections. let's define this a little bit, right? Corrections are information. It's not the same as a punishment. Mm-hmm. A punishment is a message of you did this, and so now I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real place for that in dog training because the dogs don't think in that level, right? They don't think because of this, now this is true. They think the door is open, so I'm going to go out.
Yeah.
But they don't go, I'm going to go outside, and then that's going to make my parents come out to get me.
Right.
And they're busy on the computer, so this is what I'm going to do. That's too complicated. That's mm-hmm. not where they're thinking. So corrections are information, right? It's not the same as punishment. Just like if I told you what is 5 times 5 and you didn't know the answer, and I never gave you the answer, and I never told you no. So I say, what's 5 times 5? And you're like, 400. And I just nod my head or I say nothing.
Right.
How are you ever going to learn?
Yeah.
I have to tell you, no, that's wrong. Do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Or else it's impossible for you to just randomly find the answer.
Yeah.
There's too many variables.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you do give a correction, though, you need to deliver them calmly and you need to release that pressure the instant the dog makes the right choice.
Yeah.
That's really, really important. And then we're going to proof the skills with distance. We're going to add duration. We're going to add distractions in until each step of training is complete. That is the concept of fair balance, but still reward-based dog training. All right, last few questions for the trainers. What do you feel like from a trainer perspective, Brianna, what do you feel like the criteria is that has to be met before you layer in an e-collar for off-leash reliability?
Definitely going to be leash pressure and markers.
So the dog responds to markers, understands the markers. Yep. And I think you need to teach them on a leash, but then you need to ensure that the dog knows what is expected.
Right.
Whatever that is, right? Do you have to have the dog on a leash for sit and down? No, not necessarily. But usually when we're talking about off-leash reliability, we're almost always talking about recall.
Yeah.
And so if your dog doesn't come when it's on a leash, it's sure not going to come off leash.
Right. Yeah.
It's just not. It's not going to get better.
Nope.
So start on leash, maintain accountability by being able to just reel them in or step on the leash and walk towards them so that they can't play catch me if you can.
Right.
And that's what gives you that accountability. So I was going to share a case. Do you have one? I was going to share a case where stepping down to a simpler tool actually improved communication. I can think of one.
You go first. And so I don't take yours on accident because okay. I have a couple in my head.
So we had a dog that we were working with that, was always on a prong collar. And for whatever reason, we were just getting really low. The dog was pulling through the collar and was interested in everything else outside. The prong collar typically almost immediately limits the dog from pulling. And this just did not seem to be helping. I think it was making the dog more reactive. I think it was making the dog more excitable. and less paying attention to what we were asking for. Mm-hmm. And so taking the prong collar off and going back down to just a regular slip lead completely changed our walking experience.
Yeah.
With that dog. And we were able to go out and the dog walked perfectly on a loose leash. And so what was happening was we were just getting a lot of extra noise in that communication line because the prong collar was just either uncomfortable. It was
overstimulating.
Yeah, there you go.
If it's a dog that's already overstimulated,
and it was building frustration in the dog, rather than we didn't need it.
Yeah,
right. That dog did not need it. Now we've seen plenty of cases where going up the chain, up to a Hermspringer like prong collar or up to a Star Mark, is absolutely the right time and right place for that dog. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's not. And when it's not, then it's not. Mm-hmm. There's no like, oh, well, you can only go up. No, you can go right on back down.
Right. Have one of everything.
There's plenty of dogs that walk just fine on a harness.
Right, and we tell
people, really are.
Or I will tell people all the time, it's like, you have 20 toys in your basket, buy a harness, buy a flat collar, buy a martingale, buy a prong collar, buy a Star Mark, buy a slip lead.
So many people have an entire toy box for the dogs. Tools. Right.
Buy them.
Right. Play with them. Put them on something different each time.
Right.
Whatever.
And if one doesn't work, return it. It's 2025. We just return things for free.
I love that. Right, but the concept is, we are not at any point in all of this going, no, you must use more force. You must. No, sometimes you're already using too much.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to go back down.
Yeah.
Now, that's not usually the case, but never say never.
Right.
And we've seen it.
Yeah.
So that was my example.
Nice.
Was that yours?
That was one of mine. So I'm glad, because I almost went with that one because I thought yours might be another one. But we've had a dog before that we've seen that was on an e-collar and it would just like shut down on the e-collar. And you loop back around and it's because the dog was like never taught leash pressure or didn't understand the command even verbally. And so you have to backtrack at that point and you have to go back to teaching the dog leash pressure, verbal, all of those things. And then you go back to the e-collar and you have like half the amount of pressure that you originally needed because they were just like going up and up and up. And they were like, he's not listening to it. He just didn't understand it. And so he was like, well, I'm just going to lay down. And they thought it was defiance and like reluctance to follow through with the command, but the dog just didn't even know what they were asking.
Yeah.
So jumping to an e-collar doesn't work for every dog.
Right.
Sometimes you have to go back. Sometimes they know one command on the e-collar and they don't understand the other one. So you have to attach that leash. Don't be afraid to put a leash on the dog, even if they're on an e-collar.
Yeah, you can do both.
Right. When we go to e-collar, the dog doesn't just go from a leash to an e-collar. The dog goes from a 6-foot leash, dragging it, to a long line, dragging it, to an e-collar, still with a long line, dragging it.
Yep.
And then they will stay on that phase for quite some time before you unhook a long line and give your dog total freedom.
Right.
And show that they are 100% off leash, but have to come back to you no matter what. Because I will tell people all day long, let your dog drag a long line, because that gives you 10 feet of room to catch that dog if you need to.
Right.
It gives you 15 feet. It gives you however much. But they make lightweight ones and they make heavier ones. And just because your dog is smaller or thin and whatever, doesn't mean that you can't find a long line that's plenty lightweight for them to drag. I have one of my favorite light ones that I got from like PetSmart. And I got it because it was lightweight,
yeah.
Not because it was fancy, but I just wanted one that was light enough for small dogs to drag around and not be like, oh, this is really inconvenient.
Right. And it's 2025. They make biothane long line leashes.
They make everything, material.
But biothane is nice because it just wipes clean.
Right. Yeah.
And so you can drag it around. Right.
I'm not a huge fan. My hands get sweaty. It's slippery. I don't know.
Right. It is slippery when it's wet.
Yeah.
Right. But that That's kind of the point, is right. that you can have them drag it around the backyard or wherever, or the trail yeah. or whatever. And when at the end of the day, you just wipe it with a wet cloth and yeah. it just comes clean.
Right.
That is and so true. You don't have to like throw it in the washer right. or anything like
it
that.
It is easier to clean,
yep.
but.
Yep. Just an option.
Right. All right. There's like 15 different materials. There's so one many for everybody. Different.
You're right. So we're going to open it up for questions for the clients that are on the line here. I'm going to, you guys should be able to unmute yourselves. But I'll open it up for questions at this time, and then we'll go over our listener projects, and then we'll close it out for tonight. Anybody have a question? No questions tonight.
All right.
Or everyone is stuck on mute somehow. All righty. So I will finish it up. If anybody does think of a question before we close this out, just jump in here. Project number one for our listener projects tonight. We usually come up with two projects each podcast, are just exercises and things that owners can do at home. Project number one, fit and pressure release check. So check your dog's collar. Make sure that it fits using the two-finger rule, and then adjust as needed. So attach your leash, and then in a quiet room, apply that light forward leash pressure, and the instant the dog yields, say yes or free or whatever your marker is that releases, release all the pressure there and then offer them a reward. Repeat, you know, 10 reps, 15 reps or so, and then finish with a nice, like solid free or break or something like that. And then just reward your dog, pet them, give them praise, go outside with them, throw a ball, something like that. But make it fun. Make sure your dog's collar fits. Make sure they can't pull out of it, things like that. Those are just responsible things to do as dog owners. Project number two. So long line recall. So use like a 20 or 30 foot long line and let the dog kind of drift away. But still on slack, right? Slack on the leash. And then what we want to do is we're going to say, come here, whatever your recall word is. And then we're going to guide them lightly, mark it with a reward as they start to move, and then free to release. Make sure that you are not, like, we don't want to play catch me if you can, right? And we also don't want to encourage the dog to do the little half moon patterns around us. So increase that pressure a little bit and give them come or here. And then as they yield to that, make sure that they stay in that straight line. You can also kind of move away from them to kind of like turn on that prey drive in the dog's mind so that they want to follow you. And then use that movement to be part of the fun and the reward, right? We move and that creates excitement. If the dog plays keep away or the dog does a little half moon thing or the dog's like, nope, you catch me, then we're just going to be like, no. And we're going to give them a little bit more pressure on the leash or on the long line. We're going to reaffirm, come, and then guide them in. And we're only going to reward them if they actually like arrive, right? So there's your two projects to practice for our listeners. And at this point, we have covered all of the subject matter that I've got for tonight.
All right. right.
So with that, we are going to start signing off tonight. We talked about some of the different tools and different options that we had to work with our dogs tonight. Thank you for tuning in. I really appreciate you being here. Just a reminder, I would absolutely love it if you guys left us a comment, leave us a like, leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing and how we can improve, because this is always going to be a work in progress. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.